Hello and welcome to episode 45 of Exploring Environmental History. I'm Jan Oosthoek. After a long gap, the podcast is back from down under with a topic that concerns New Zealand. When Europeans settled New Zealand and other parts of the world in the 19th century, it is often presumed that they relied on the emerging inorganic medicines and colonial doctors to maintain their health. However, there's also another story that seems to be forgotten, that of the use of medicine plants by settlers. For these medicinal purposes, they introduced many plants. Joanna Bishop is a PhD student at the University of Waikato in Hamilton, New Zealand, and she's working on a study uncovering the story of the introduction and use of medicinal plants in New Zealand and their medical as well as environmental histories. Joanne, welcome on the podcast.
Thank you, Jan. Thanks for inviting me.
Can you tell us what the main objective is of your research and how will you bridge the gap between medical and environmental history?
The main objective of my work is to uncover the role or the importance, if you like, of medicinal plants to settlers in New Zealand from around about 1850 through to the early 20th century. Exploring their use over this time period will allow me also to investigate the knowledge associated with these plants, the exchange and adaptation of that knowledge, which in turn will reflect broader and social and cultural beliefs and practices. For example, the development of the pharmaceutical industry and the growing influence of science in the late 19th century changed the way plants were understood, processed, and used by both professional medical practitioners, as well as domestic healers. This project, my PhD, fits, I think, effectively into both environmental and medical historiography. And as far as bridging the gap between the two, it will, I hope, illustrate how anxieties relating to health and wellness were related to and expressed in people's immediate environments. Colonists brought plants to New Zealand to modify their environment in ways that reflected medical theories and perceptions of the time. Being aware of the theories, medical policies and practices that directed the introduction of particular plants is an important part of my work.
So was the introduction of medicinal plants also part of a process of, you can say, Europeanizing the landscape in New Zealand? Or was the impetus of their introduction more related to, indeed, their healing and sanitizing qualities?
I think some of the plants would certainly fit into the first category, Europeanizing the landscape, although there were plants from other parts of the world also being introduced to New Zealand during that time as well. Many of the species used by home healers were very much part of the English landscape, things like rosemary and thyme, and so bringing them here could well have produced a sense of familiarity for many settlers, which is a focus that many garden historians in New Zealand take. As far as their sanitising qualities, there's quite a bit of evidence to suggest that individual species, such as the eucalyptus, were thought to mitigate the miasma that was believed to cause disease, and so those trees in particular were introduced for that purpose. However, I don't think we can overlook the sheer practicality of introducing plants that had medicinal qualities into a country that, in the early period that I'm looking at, provided few medical services.
Can you also say that the introduction of plants in general are linked to the wider scientific networks of the British Empire? Some people have looked into it. Of course, the work of Richard Grove comes to mind, but also of James Beattie. I presume this was also the case with the introduction of medicinal plants.
Certainly. And as you know, James Beattie is my chief supervisor, and his work influences mine considerably. Science and economics played a big part in the introduction of medicinal plants to New Zealand. The economic potential that lay in the commercial cultivation of these plants was recognised early on. And from the 1870s onwards, medicinal plants were being trialled in botanic gardens and the experimental stations that popped up around New Zealand by the late 19th century. At this stage of my research, I'm finding it difficult to find evidence of any significant commercial cultivation in the country, despite it seems like the climate was quite favourable for their growth. Also, the pharmaceutical society was appealing to these organisations, particularly the botanical gardens, to supply them with plants. Whether or not it was economically feasible to grow them here, or whether there are other factors that limited the opportunity to grow them commercially, I've yet to discover. As far as the scientific links and networks, by the 1880s, pharmaceutical and medical societies and associations in Britain, New Zealand and Australia were closely linked, and pharmacology and botany and materia medica formed part of a medical curriculum which was constructed and developed in this network that linked countries and individuals together. Most doctors trained in the 19th century were taught materia medica and later pharmacology, which had at its base botanical science. And perhaps it's no surprise that many of New Zealand's early doctors pursued their interest in botany once they got to New Zealand, and many did in fact experiment with native medicinal plants and fed their results back into an international network of developing pharmacological discourse.
You were mentioning the use of indigenous medicinal plants. I can imagine that the native Maori populations had their own practices using these plants. Was there any cross-cultural interaction and exchange of knowledge between the Maori and the European settlers when it comes to medicinal plants and medical practices?
Certainly there was. The use of medicinal plants by Maori was recognised early on from Cook's first visit, in fact, when many of our earliest doctors arrived with this knowledge in botany and the natural sciences. Many of them pursued that interest and experimented with these plants, as I say. To do this effectively, of course, they had to rely to some degree on local knowledge, which suggests a degree of cooperation between Maori and Pākehā healers. A couple of examples that spring to mind are Dr. Crocombe, the first doctor in Otago, which is a settlement at the bottom of the South Island in New Zealand. He often used native plants in his medical practice, and Invercargill, which is even further down south, their first doctor, Dr. Francis Monckton, actually published a book in 1858 called Hints for Bush Surgery, in which he describes the uses and applications of native plants. And a brief Māori pharmacopoeia was published in Brett's Colonist Guide, which was published in London and distributed to potential settlers and colonists. And scientists continued to write and examine and analyse the properties of native species up until the late 19th century. So there were observations and recordings of the indigenous and of Māori using these plants for quite some time.
Another question that's quite interesting is the question about medicinal plants that are no longer used. And this leads to in some cases, to near extinction of species, because if you stop managing them, in many cases, they kind of come under pressure because they're not looked after. Do you know of any plants that have disappeared or are on the brink of extinction in the context of New Zealand?
Well, my research is focused on introduced species, so they're really all I can talk about with any degree of authority. And at this time, there's no concern that I know of about a particular introduced species or any concerted effort being made to preserve any introduced medicinal that I know of. Many of the medicinal plants that I'm looking at are still used today by medical herbalists in New Zealand, but as the industry here is relatively small, as far as I know, there's no risk of extinction or depletion. But perhaps, ironically, it's our commitment to biomedicine here that keeps our plants relatively safe. I do know that it's been estimated one-fifth of the world's medicinal species are under threat due to this increase in Western countries to herbal medicines and remedies, and that this consumption is, you know, threatening traditional ways of life and indigenous ecosystems around the world. I think this occurs mainly when, as you say, wild populations of plants are over-harvested and no contingencies or sustainable cultivation is organised or managed. New Zealand's native medicinal plants are certainly being used more and more by modern herbalists and traditional healers, especially as more are assayed and their properties are understood in scientific terms. However, I don't think at this stage the industry is big enough yet to cause any major effect or threat to native populations, as far as I know. And as far as them being incorporated into orthodox medicines, the scale of the pharmaceutical industry is such that I believe most medicinal plants are imported, if not all.
Finally, I'd like to get on to the question of sources. What sources are available for your study, and how do you use them to piece together the introduction and usage histories?
Well, I'm actually using a wide variety of sources, including nursery catalogues to indicate domestic use and propagation, reports from botanic gardens, experimental stations, the acclimatisation societies, of course, and correspondence between prominent botanists such as Hooker and Thomas Kirk in New Zealand in particular. I'm also looking at medical and pharmaceutical journals from the period to determine how these plants were being studied and understood over time. Prescription books and personal accounts to see how they were being applied, and an important source for me are home medical manuals to see what plants were being used by the domestic healers and in the home and communities.
So in order to interpret these wide range of sources, do we need any medical knowledge as well as botanical knowledge?
It certainly helps that I have a background in biological sciences and I'm familiar with medical terminology. I think what helps more is that I trained for a short time as a medical herbalist, so I'm familiar with terms that describe the actions of plants, and these terms were used by 19th century professional medical practitioners. Having the background that I do, I think, means that I can explore the more strictly scientific sources and perhaps better able to understand these than someone completely unfamiliar with the language and methodology.
So to round it all up, you're in the middle of your PhD research, but when it's all done, all finished, and you've written it up, how can a study like yours contribute to present-day understanding of the use of medicinal plants? Is there any practical use for studies like that?
I believe it can feed into current debates, the contention surrounding the so-called alternative therapies. It certainly feeds into medical anthropological analyses of the development of biomedicine, where it came from, how it rose to power, why it rose to power, looking at one component of medical practice, medicinal plants, to some degree challenges the dichotomy that a lot of medical historians have used in the past, this alternative biomedicine dichotomy. And suggests that the interaction between the two and that distinction is far more fluid and dynamic, which can be applied to sort of modern-day medical practice as well.
Well, I'm looking forward to read the full thesis when it's all finished and its conclusions. It sounds all very interesting. Well, thank you very much for joining me today on the podcast.
That was Joanna Bishop talking about her research on the history of medicinal plants in New Zealand. Recently, she published a short piece on her project in the newsletter of the Australian Forest History Society. This can be downloaded from the Society's website at www.foresthistory.org.au. This brings us to the end of this edition of Exploring Environmental History. I hope that you enjoyed the show, and if you have any comments or questions, please email me at kjwostuk, and that's one word, at eh-resources.org. I would like to use this opportunity to remind you that all previous episodes of the podcast can be downloaded from the Environmental History Resources website. This is Jan Oosthoek from Brisbane, Australia.